Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
It's Eddie Trunk. It's time for another edition of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday, podcast1.com and iTunes. Hope you guys are doing well. Hope everybody had a great Memorial weekend. I am recording this podcast this week via my iPhone, so that's why the open segment sounds a little different than normal, but the interviews will be usual top quality. Get ready for that. We got two good ones coming up in a minute, but I'm in Tulsa once again, where I spend a lot of time, this time coming off of, at the time I'm recording this, hosting Rocklahoma, year number 11 for Rocklahoma, an absolute blast as always. And this year we had good weather. It was hot. I'll tell you that. It was hot as hell, but it was no storms. The last 2 years, Rocklahoma was wiped out, the headlining acts on Saturday because of bad weather, which can, of course, happen in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area, especially in May. And this year, no storms, no rain, no delays whatsoever. So that was a great thing about Rocklahoma this year, although it was blazing hot, especially during the times that Vince Neil and Tom Kiefer and Hailstorm were on stage on the days that they played. Got a chance to see most of the bands, not everything, as is par for the course with festivals with me. I am working at these things, pulled in a lot of different directions, so I don't get to just sit and watch all the bands, but I did get to watch a good amount of a lot of groups. And, you know, if you want more on that, I did a lot on Rocklahoma on my Sirius XM show, Trunk Nation, which the episode or the day that I was on this past Tuesday, if you're a Sirius XM subscriber, go grab that show. It's on demand on the Sirius XM app, and you can hear really about an hour and a half on all the bands and all my thoughts about the bands that played Rocklahoma this year. A little bit too much to get into here on the podcast, especially given the fact that I have two interviews for you this week, which we'll get to in a second. But it's always fun to be out there in Tulsa at Rocklahoma, and I appreciate all the great fans, all the bands, everybody that I hung with, everybody that I got to see, and look forward to year number 12 next year. It's been amazing to be a part of a festival like this since it very first started. And as I've said a few times, one of the incredibly cool things about Rocklahoma is it really is the only one of the big rock festivals across the country that includes 80s bands. You had Lynch Mob, you had Vince Neil, you had Tom Kiefer, a real nice sprinkling. You had Poison closing on Sunday. So you have a real nice representation of the 80s acts sitting right in there with 90s acts and beyond. And that's a really cool thing to see, and something that, honestly, I wish a lot more happened, or we saw that happen, I should say, a lot more, but it just doesn't. There's still a bias against a lot of these 80s bands, and I'm glad Rocklahoma mixes them all up equally. So a good time there in Tulsa. I hosted Striper as well in Tulsa yesterday, if you're listening to this on post day at the IDL Ballroom. I'm recording this on Tuesday, so can't tell you about that show because it hasn't happened yet. But for the sake of the timeline, as you're listening to this on the first day of posts, I hosted a Striper show at the IDL which I'll tell you more about. I'll be back here again in Tulsa in July for two appearances, on the 13th to host a show with Dokken, on the 28th to host a free show with Bisto Blanco, both of those also at the IDL Ballroom in Tulsa. So if you're in this area of the country, I'll see you again in July and in August. A lot of shows that I'm hosting here in Tulsa, and it's great to be involved. I thank my friend Doug Burgess for having me involved in putting these shows on, and hope you guys get out and support if you're in that area of the country. Coming to Cincinnati on June 9th at the venue for my speaking show. Hope to see you if you're in Cincinnati. All of my appearances, as they're confirmed, as usual, on the homepage of eddietrunk.com. You also may have seen some of the trailers now for my new TV series, which is debuting on July 1st on Access TV, called Trunk Fest. Really excited that some footage and some teaser clips coming out on that. And you can see those on my website on eddietrunk.com right now. Get a little taste of what's to come with this brand new festival show that I will be hosting, and that premieres on July 1st, 9:30, 8:30 Central on Access TV. And I'm getting ready to shoot two more episodes to put a wrap on season one, which, like I said, you'll see on that premiere date of July 1. So busy time as usual in my world, a lot of great stuff going on. Follow on Twitter, follow on Instagram, follow on Facebook at Eddie Trunk. And like I said, eddietrunk.com is where you'll find everything as far as my confirmed appearances, shows I'm presenting. Go to ET's box office, especially if you're in the New York area, and register to win tickets to all sorts of shows. Music news, Dana updates that all the time, and you get daily updates on the acts that you care about right there on my site. Couple other quick notes here. Beyond Rocklahoma, big news in my world, at least. Everybody knows what a huge fan of UFO I am. News coming out, Phil Mogg, the band's sole original member that never left the band, that's been there since day one. Phil Mogg, after 50 years of UFO, and now at 70 years old, is calling it a day and retiring. A lot of people reached out to me about this, asking me, you know, what my thoughts were. Wow, you must be devastated. The truth is, I'm not. I am often someone who says that I do not believe people should stay too long at the party, meaning continue playing in bands when they feel they can't do it anymore. When they've put their time in, they feel their capability is not there, their heart's not in it anymore. As much as I love these bands, I would much rather have them retire and end than stay too long, wonder why they're still playing, talk about how they can't do it anymore, they don't sound that good anymore. So I'm not going to be a hypocrite. As much as I love UFO, I know they can't go on forever, and I'm fine with Phil Mogg retiring. I applaud his decision that he knew when to say when. Vocally, Phil Mogg is still pretty damn good, but his heart's not in it anymore as far as touring, from his own statement. And, you know, I mean, he can't sing exactly like he used to. That's not going to get better. He's still darn good, but still, I give him credit for knowing when to say when. So one more tour or set of shows for Phil Mogg and UFO. There's been some people talking about, could UFO continue without him? I think that's ludicrous. I, as a lifelong UFO fan, couldn't even entertain that idea of a band called UFO without Phil Mogg. That's just pointless to me. However, we've seen crazier things, right? We'll see. I'm not even thinking about anything like that. However, I am thinking about what UFO is going to do for these final shows. Nothing is announced, but like all UFO fans, we can only hope that it means a return for Michael Schenker and, if any way possible, Pete Way. And I would also throw in Paul Chapman to that equation. Now, there's been nothing said, but man, if you are a UFO fan like I am and you want to see this band end, you want at least one show or one tour with Schenker, and hopefully Way, and for my money, also a chapter with Chapman, if possible, involved. We don't know what's going to happen. Let's see. but man, that would be special. UFO, such an influential band, so loved by so many. You're hearing from a lot of people now about this, but whether it be Kirk Hammett, whether it be Dave Mustaine, whether it be Mike McCready, the list goes on and on of the people and artists that Phil Mogg has influenced along with all of UFO. And this is a victory lap now on an amazing career and really, for my money, one of the most underrated singers and lyricists ever in rock history, Phil Mogg, and needless to say, one of the great underrated bands to many, and that UFO. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this story plays out, but those are my thoughts on that. And one other quick note, I want to say speedy recovery to, well, I want to say best wishes to Phil Collin and his wife Helen, who recently had a child. I spent time with Phil and Def Leppard a couple weeks ago in New Jersey. They invited me to their rehearsals for the Def Leppard tour. As I'm sure you heard, shortly into the tour, Phil Collin had to leave Def Leppard to go back to L.A. to deal with a family situation, and I wish him the best in that. I'm not going to get into any specifics on that. That'll come from Phil when they're ready, but hoping for good things for him and his wife. We'll leave it at that. Needless to say, Phil had to go back for an undisclosed period of time. And my old friend Steve Brown has stepped back into Def Leppard, and I'm real happy for Steve. Obviously, this comes under rough conditions and not the best of circumstances, but Steve is the guitar player from the band Trickster. And he, in case you don't know, Steve has actually filled in Def Leppard in the past for Vivian Campbell when Vivian has had issues with having to go get his treatments for cancer and having to miss some shows because of that. Steve Brown has been the sub for Vivian Campbell. Well, this time around, Steve is the sub for Phil Collin and has done a few shows playing lead guitar in Def Leppard and, of course, having to sing all that stuff. So it speaks greatly to Steve's talent that he's able to step into Def Leppard and fill the shoes of either guitar player at this point. He's done both. No small feat at all. So congratulations to Steve getting another stint in Def Leppard, clearly not for the reasons anyone would want for Phil to have to deal with some personal family stuff. He'll be back soon, I'm sure, but I'm happy for my buddy Steve that he's gotten another swing in there with Def Leppard, another chance to showcase his talents and see where that may take him and who may recognize that to bring him into the fold. So just a little update on that in case you were unaware of that news and you saw Def Leppard. No Phil Collin, which I don't think has happened in probably 35 years. I mean, I don't think Def Leppard's ever played a show without Phil Collin since he joined the band back in 83. So that's pretty remarkable if you think about it, and obviously serious for Phil to have to step away from that tour with Journey that's out there right now. So just wanted to give you a quick thing on that as well. You, as usual, all the music news that you need to know is on eddietrunk.com as well. And follow on Twitter at Eddie Trunk for info and updates. Our interviews this week, there are two of them. Let's get to them because they're two good ones. Jason Hook from the band Five Finger Death Punch. Jason called in to talk about the new Five Finger Death Punch record and also their current tour and their upcoming tour with Shinedown. So Jason Hook is our first interview up, and he joined me from the road with Five Finger Death Punch. Interview number two took place from the Hard Rock in Tulsa the day before Rocklahoma kicked off with Billy Duffy of the Cult. Billy was staying in the hotel at the Hard Rock here the day before Rocklahoma. I hosted a meet and greet with the Cult, and Billy was nice enough to come by and join me for a few minutes at my radio booth here in Tulsa at the Hard Rock. So great double dip this week. Jason Hook of Five Finger Death Punch first, followed by Billy Duffy of the Cult second on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. And one other thing. If you're shopping on Amazon, be sure to start on my page, amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. We'll get Jason Hook up in a sec, followed by Billy Duffy. And remember, one last reminder, All the interviews you hear on the Eddie Trunk podcast originate and are courtesy of my SiriusXM show on Volume, which is called Trunk Nation. Volume is channel 106. Hear my show live daily, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, replaying every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, and always available on the SiriusXM app. You only get a small taste of what I do on a daily basis here on this podcast. Join me on the radio show, hear it all live, hear a ton more, get involved, call in, and all that sort of stuff. All right, we'll get back with those interviews right after this.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, let me tell you guys about TheraWorks Relief. Now, if you're one of the millions of Americans who suffers from muscle cramps in your legs and feet, relief is finally in sight. TheraWorks Relief is a topical foam that's clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast with daily use. TheraWorks Relief can even prevent muscle cramps before they start. I got to tell you, I recommend TheraWorks Relief to my family and my friends, and the results speak for themselves. I have had an issue with a horrendous cramp and muscle cramp that I get in my calf that has woken me up like somebody stabbing you in the calf. It is unbelievably painful. And the first thing I did was reach for TheraWorks Relief, and it really did help. It is the real deal. Life-changing product, and best of all, you don't even need a prescription. TheraWorks Relief only takes a minute to apply. It absorbs quickly, and it really works. TheraWorks Relief is my choice for preventing and relieving muscle cramps. Make it yours too. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens pharmacies, or at TheraWorksRelief.com. Talk to your pharmacist, about TheraWorks Relief and experience relief from muscle cramps for yourself. That's TheraWorks Relief for your muscle cramps.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
If you like this show, then check out the Adam Carolla Show every weekday on Podcast One. The Ace Man still holds the title of the number one daily downloaded podcast in the world as he complains about whatever's on his mind with his celebrity pals like Dr. Drew Pinsky, Joe Coy, and many, many more. Check out the Adam Carolla Show at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Also remember to rate and review.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Eddie Trunk Podcast, everyone. Right now, as promised, our first of two interviews this week, Jason Hook of Five Finger Death Punch, not only talking about the band, but talking about a tremendous film that he's a producer on called Hired Gun. Here's Jason up first, and then we'll get to, in just a couple minutes after that, or after this interview, I should say, I'll also give you an interview with Billy Duffy of The Cult. So two interviews this week, Jason Hook right now on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. What's going on, brother?
Hey, Eddie, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How's the show's going?
We're very lucky, Eddie. Things are very good in the Five Finger Death Punch camp at the moment.
At the moment, is it a day by day venture?
No. The truth is, what can I say? We're experiencing a lot of great attendance. You know, a lot of the shows have been sold out. Anytime we package or shine down, it seems to bring the people out. So, you know, I'm having a good time. I have a little bit of an upper respiratory infection today, Eddie, so you have to forgive me. I've got my sex line of deep voice happening.
Yeah, really. I feel like I'm calling the 1-800 five finger. I don't know what.
Right. Try to contain yourself, Eddie.
Finger something else here, Jason. I don't know what you're doing there.
I know. But you know what, Ed? When you asked me if I wanted to do this, the answer was absolutely 100% yes. I think you have the hottest show on radio, and I'm a fan. And any media personality that is a KISS fan gets my full priority. So there you go.
Well, we could. Well, thank you for that. And we could easily do an entire show on Kiss because you're another one in the cult as well of the deep. Have you ever had any extended Kiss conversation with John Five?
Yes and no. He, you know, he's tight with all those guys, so I'm extremely jealous. when we played with Zombie Somewhere, and all of a sudden I'm just walking to my dressing room and there's Peter Criss. I'm like, of course John Five's friends with Peter Criss. Why wouldn't he be? I'm like, nobody likes me, but I love John Five, so I stay close to John.
I picked John. I was in L.A. last week, and I gave John a ride home from his rehearsal with Zombie, and we got to his house, and he took me inside. You know, he has a room dedicated to Kiss.
Oh, hey, I love it. Keep going.
And it's ridiculous. He's got a pinball machine in great working order, and he's buying up everything he can, and he's got it all displayed. And I don't know if you know this or not, but you really should. He's got an Instagram account that's called Knights in Satan's Service.
He just asked me if I would contribute share my story about my first Kiss record, but I just told him I would wait until my voice clears up a little bit. But I have the story from. He just asked me like 2 days ago. It was great.
You got to follow it. You got to follow the Instagram. It's a trip. Every day he posts a different collectible from his collection, and then he'll, like you or me or whoever, the super fans, he'll have do these little video moments, you know, talking about like what their favorite Kiss moment or Kiss record is. What, you're younger than me by about 8 years or so. What, and you grew up in Canada. What was your first Kiss experience?
Well, my first Kiss concert was the Asylum tour at Maple Leaf Gardens. What year would that be, Ed? 86?
5, 6-ish. Yeah, 85, 6, something
yeah, five,
like that.
Okay, 5, 6, okay. and King Cobra opened.
Yeah.
They were on their Thrill of a Lifetime. I can talk about this stuff with you, Ed, because you're like the trivia, the deepest well of trivia out there.
Carmine Appice on drums in King Cobra.
That's right. And that was when they had just shot the Never Say Die video, and all of us rock fans were like, no, did they cut their hair off? Do you remember that with Lou Gossett Jr.?
Yeah, well, the first King Cobra album, Ready to Strike, was actually really good. The second was when they went totally commercial. And, you know, then that singer had a sex change and became a woman.
I know. I actually really loved the King Cobra. The first King Cobra record was aggressive and dark. I loved
it. Yeah, Ready to Strike,
And then they did lighten it up a little bit because I'm sure the record sale or the record company is probably pushing for more sales as they always do. But either way, I just want to let you know, Eddie, I have 2 Kiss pinball machines. Just saying.
Really?
Yes, I have the original. I have one from 1978, the Bally's machine, which I fully restored. With the amount of money that I paid to ship it from Canada and to have it restored, I could have bought 3 of the freaking Bally's. But anyway, I have that one, and then I had to go in for the 2015 Stern red powder-coated limited edition pinball machine.
Yeah, see, I like the original one, not only because of that band, but also because of the fact that I don't like the pinball machines where they've got like 5 balls going at once and all that. I like, I actually like playing the original machine. Beyond the fact that it's a Kiss machine, I actually like the streamlined nature of it and the fact that it's a fun. You know what you're doing. You got stuff to shoot for on there.
Exactly. Although, when you talk about multiple balls in play, you know, Gene Simmons does regurgitate 5 balls when he throws up in the middle of your game. So that is that is pretty cool. But you got to feed him the balls first. He keeps them in. He collects the balls and he goes, he throws them all up again.
just randomly the game will do that, or that's during the play of the game?
That's part of the strategy. Is you got to fill up his stomach with your balls, and then, oh, that sounds awful. New topic.
How did I know that I was going to sit here and get you on? And not, we haven't talked about your band or your movie yet, but we're already in the Kiss rabbit hole deep.
I'm in one of those moods, dude. I'm sorry.
That's great. I love it. You kidding me? So Asylum Tour is your first show. I mean, that's, of course, no makeup, Bruce Kulick, Eric Carr era. the MTV era, at least here in America. But it's interesting because that's the show and that's the band you saw that made the huge impact, huh?
Oh, dude, I was infected several years before that tour. I was begging my parents to take me to Maple Leaf Gardens to see the Dynasty show. But we had somehow coincidentally booked a houseboat trip. A houseboat trip. I missed the Dynasty tour for a houseboat trip. Anyway, yeah, you know, I'm a huge fan, and I have spent a little time one-on-one with each of them, and I cherish that, you know.
Well, listen, I want to talk about the movie Hired Gun, because that's long overdue, and I've been a huge fan and been talking about it with everybody and on this show and how much I love it ever since Phil X actually first invited me out to that screening a couple years ago in L.A. We'll talk about the movie in a second, but as far as Five Finger is concerned, new album is out on Friday, right?
Yeah, finally. You know that we finished this record December. We turned this record in December 2016, Eddie. So I'm already over it. I've already written half a new record. You know. But I mean, all joking aside, everybody is aware of the fact that we got into a bit of a legal tangle with the label, and it really was so stupid. I mean, the net is, and it's funny because they don't want me to talk about it because it really upset me, and I'm not used to making music and being told what to do. Like, that's a really strange shift, you know? And if anyone's ever seen Artifact, remember that Artifact movie with
Jared Leto. Yeah.
Right. So you get a snapshot of how weird it would be to be making music under the condition of, you know, in his case, being sued for $30 million. It was just weird. I didn't really like it. And I haven't done a lot of press. You're the first person I've agreed to talk to about the record because to me, it's like being interviewed about a horrible car crash. You know, it's like, yeah, we got sued and there was all kinds of things that we were asked to do and that didn't feel natural. And, you know, we wiggled out of it and the whole thing got dropped. So, I mean, it was just like, what was that for?
No. So obviously the circumstances around making the record were not ideal, but as far as the record itself and the material, you stand behind that. You like the record itself?
Oh yeah. Like, you know, exactly. I mean, it was really strange because I think, you know, we do what we do and we're extremely picky about the records, or at least I am anyway, because I've always thought records are forever. Like, I'll die, I'll go away. And these little discs or MP3s or whatever will last forever. So it's really important to me to get it right. No, you know, there shouldn't be a deadline on, you know, it's too important. Somebody says, well, I can't finish the guitar solo because we'll fly to the tour in the morning. To me, that's unacceptable. Because the guitar solo is going to be forever. And the tour is like, whatever, there's always tours, you know?
And that's a great way of looking at it, because too many people just throw stuff out there that don't put a lot behind it. They almost look at like, well, a new record is just another vehicle to do some press and promote a tour. But to actually care about what's on it and that's going to be your legacy, I think it's really important. I think more people should view records like that, and I don't think they really do.
Yeah, okay, so you understand. I think that off of a good record, everything else will fall into place. Good record with popular songs means people want to come see it live, means they will pick up a t-shirt at the show. Everything kind of falls into place if the records are there. So I don't like being messed with in that process, but we made it through okay. We got, it's coming out Friday. It's funny, Eddie, because the thing has been, I've been hearing this thing since 2016, so it's really not that fresh for me.
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, that's coming out. Oh, neat.
Well, I'm sure for the fans, though, they're excited about it, and they finally get to hear it, like you said, available everywhere on Friday. And I'll tell you, man, that video you guys put out recently for the track Champagne is friggin' hysterical.
Well, thanks. You know, videos are kind of like the necessary evil. I'm sure you've heard this before. But right after you finish making a record, in our case, we did a lot of touring, and then all of a sudden they're like, I know you guys are off for a week, and I know it's a really important week for you guys to recharge your batteries, but we kind of got to get this video done. So we're like, ah, crap. You know? there's just an endless amount of stuff to do. But we're like, we don't have a concept, so let's just be goofy. That seems to, at least we get a chuckle. And, you know, sometimes when you're taking everything so seriously, Eddie, it's people like, oh, brother, fans in the hair playing guitar on top of a cliff. We've seen it, you know?
Well, it's hysterical. People got to check it out. You can go to the band's website or wherever you watch videos these days and see it, because it is a trip. It is really funny. FiveFingerDeathPunch.com is the band's website to pre-order the record or buy the record. And there's a ton of merch up there and the tour dates and this video for Champagne, which is hysterical. It looks like Ivan's doing better. He seems to be in good spirits, seems to be healthy. Everything been cool with him?
Yeah. I mean, it's like night and day. If it seems as if this sobriety, the concept, has finally taken hold. He's been a dream come true. It's like somebody dropped us into Fantasy Island with Mr. Rourke, you know. It's like, who is this guy? But, hey, I'm not complaining.
That's great. That's good to see. That's good to see and hear. And, of course, I'm sure it's a big relief for the fans as well. So that's a good thing. And you got a tour you're doing out. You're out now with Shinedown, are you?
This was only a couple weeks, Eddie. This one was just a short run. The tour that we're kind of promoting is Breaking Benjamin starts in July, I want to say, and goes all the way through to September. It's a two-monther.
Yeah, it looks like that one kicks off in Auburn, Washington, July 16th. And then, as you said, runs through there, starts on the West Coast, and that is with Breaking Benjamin, who also have a new record out. Ben was just on this show not too long ago, as a matter of fact. So get your tour dates, get your information. FiveFingerDeathPunch.com is the website. Another thing that Jason did that I just think is phenomenal and I think is a must-view for anybody in my audience is work on a film called Hired Gun that I first found out about, I guess, a couple years ago. I happened to be in L.A., and Phil X called me and said, hey, we're doing this screening. You should come out. Jason was on the road at the time, so wasn't there, but I absolutely loved the movie. It is now available on Netflix to see and in whatever other configurations. And Jason, how did this thing come to you? Like, was this your idea? Was doing a film about the behind-the-scenes guys in the music industry? You were one for a long time. Is that where the idea was born?
Well, yeah. I mean, yes. In the very beginning, I partnered with the director, Fran Strine. Fran was out on tour with us as our videographer, and he was anxious to try to do something, big. And we were riding the bus together one night, and I said, look, I love documentaries. I collect documentaries. I've seen just about every music documentary that you could list. And I just really like that whole take the audience somewhere where they're not normally supposed to go. I really love that. Just kind of like the behind the music type stuff where kind of peeled back the layer and says, here's what you didn't know. Everyone was on cocaine. This person died. This person's sister committed. You know what I mean? Like, it's all this stuff.
I love it, too. I mean, it's my favorite type of movie. I mean, I watch everyone I can, and I talk about them every day on this show. So, yeah.
Well, and I was telling Fran, I said, look, if we do this, I want to go for the grit, the dirt, because to me, that's honest. You know, let's try to expose stuff that you wouldn't normally be exposed to, and that now becomes interesting. And I don't, you know, it's not my desire to be a filmmaker, so if I piss anyone off by being a little too honest, it's okay. I have another job. So, we talked just like 55 people assembled 300 hours of interview. Some people would come in an interview and go, look, I don't know what you're expecting, but I'm not about to talk a bunch of crap on my former bosses or my current boss. We're like, yeah, man, whatever you're comfortable with, just let it roll. Well, you know, Eddie, about an hour into the interview, they're just going off like crazy. And I'm like, girl, keep rolling. And then it's like, perfect. That's the only 5 minutes I need. We're done.
For you personally, I mentioned you personally didn't want to talk about working with some of the pop artists that you worked with, whether it be Mandy Moore or Hillary Duff, once you were in Five Finger. But obviously you pulled back the curtain on yourself in this as well, right?
Yes. And I think because remember when Sammy Hagar released his book, and I watched a lot of his press that he was doing for his book. And he's like, you know what? The only way to make it real and make it honest is if you kind of got to spill the beans on yourself, too. You got to throw yourself under the bus. And that way it's not an attack on everyone around you. And those pop gigs for me have been it's a tricky thing for me because I don't regret anything. I learned a lot from those situations. I learned things that there's no way you would learn from being just in heavy metal. We did a lot of television shows, high pressure music awards, morning shows, the Morning View. And I mean, just a lot of intense stuff. And most of the time it was just me playing guitar next to the artist. So that's a lot of pressure going out nationwide over the airways, So I just decided the only way to make it acceptable is to own it. If I don't like it when people go, I don't know what I was thinking. Oh, my God, that's embarrassing. Put that away. I can't even look at it. I don't like that. I like people going, fuck, yeah, I did that. And I was fucking amazing. You know what I mean? And it was hard. That's my opinion.
Yeah, well, I think rock and metal fans certainly get it. I mean, listen, everybody's got to make, if you're a musician and you've done a lot of session work, you've done all sorts of things with different people before you were in Five Finger Death Punch. But if you're a musician, you're trying to make a living doing what you love, which is playing your instrument. It's just like in radio. There's a lot of people that started in radio a long time ago, and I have a friend that works in country radio right now. He's a rock guy. He doesn't want to be playing country records, but at least he's doing what he loves, which is radio. So for you or anybody that does that, it's kind of the same thing. It's not like, oh, you lose your rock or metal cred card because you did something. It's like, no, you had a great gig working, doing what you loved, and you had your goal on something bigger, and now you got it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Well, thank you, Eddie. And I think it also makes a pretty compelling story because not too many people. Look, I came from Canada. I drove down with $200 in a Dodge Colt, and I just remember being more excited than scared. And I made a pact with myself on the way down. Do not work at Starbucks. Do not go and work a forklift at Home Depot. That's not why you made the trip to Los Angeles. You got your gear. So play with everybody. That was my mantra. I would go to a backyard party or barbecue, a dinner party, and I would just be like, yeah, I'll play with anybody, whatever.
What was your very first gig, Jason, when you came to L.A., when you drove from Canada? What was the very first gig?
Oh, this is tough, Eddie, but you know what? For you, I'm going to do it. I played with two singer-songwriter girls called Carmen and Camille. And I think they're Canadian. I think they're from Vancouver. And, Dad had a ton of money. And he just relocated them down to L.A. and put a band together. And he had deep pockets. And he was like, I just want the best for my girls. And so we did a bunch of these, Jack Sugar Shack type stool gigs, And that was the first one I did. I don't remember any of the songs. I barely even remember what they sound like. But it was like I learned all the songs. And then, boom, I was there making my $50 a show.
You did what you had to do. You weren't driving the forklift. You were playing guitar.
Right.
That was the idea. I understand that. Right. Now, for people that haven't seen Hired Gun, they should know this is not, the film is far from just Jason's story. Jason is a part of the story and a part of the film, but you've got so many different people in here. And it's funny because I watched the movie and it's like 98% of the people that come up on that screen are good friends. Yeah. And I'm like, yep, I know this guy. I know this story. I know this story. But whether it's Phil X, who currently plays in Bon Jovi, or I'll tell you, man, the one that comes out of that film that if you've seen Hired Gun, that everybody talks about is all the stuff with Liberty DeVito, who played drums for Billy Joel for the longest time, and his story and how he was basically looked at as, got fucked by Billy Joel. But I'm wondering now, after this film's been out a little bit, I haven't talked to or seen Liberty in a while, but has there been any repercussions from him saying what he said in the film? Does anybody know if Billy Joel has had any response to it?
Well, I'm not sure how much I should say, but we reached out to Billy before the movie was finalized. We reached out to him and said, what do we got to lose? Let's see if he'll interview. Who knows? Maybe he would like to share his side of the story. Well, we found a, I think we got through a tour manager that got to Billy, and Billy was like, really? Oh, interesting. I'm going to need to see the entire interview and have a transcript of the interview. Hmm. And so Billy and his lawyers, I don't even know if I should say this stuff, but anyway, Billy and his lawyers said, absolutely not. You can't use any of this stuff because Liberty is under a non-disclosure when they settled.
Oh.
So so we were like, okay, well, I think we shouldn't have nudged the giant. But anyway, I think it's like this, Eddie. How much worse would it be for Billy Joel to file a suit against Liberty? I mean, Liberty's like, what's he going to sue me for, my shoes? You know?
But you ended up using, like, there's a lot of revealing stuff that Liberty says still in the film. So did you guys just go ahead and do it anyway? Or is there more that he said that you cut out because of the lawyer?
We left everything in there that we wanted to put in there. And Liberty was okay with it. And I'll just leave it there.
So yeah. So basically, that the philosophy that he says, let him come out. I mean, what's he going to get at that point? You're right. I mean, you know, I think it's as important as stories out there. And I mean, I think that if you watch this film, that is one of the most, you know, gut wrenching, heartfelt things. I mean, he's such a good guy, and what he's, you know, you see him now working with the kids and doing what he's doing. It's incredible. It's an incredible part. And another drummer who's literally played with everybody, Kenny Aronoff, is in there as well.
Oh, yeah.
His stuff is great. Lukather, always hysterical. Where is Lukather the one that tells the story about somebody calling because they were in the middle of taking a shit when they wrote a song or something?
they were writing a song. They're writing it like, well, what was the song? It was Turn Your Love Around. It was Turn Your Love Around. Dun, 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 dun. I forget. Who's the artist? George Benson.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
George Benson. Okay, anyway. So they were trying to come up with a song, and Jay left the session saying, I know we're stuck. I'm going to go away and do something else. You just mess around for a couple minutes, and I'll come back. Anyway, went to take a shit. The song popped into his head, and the story goes he ran back into the room without his clothes on because it was so urgent that he document the idea. Great story. Yeah. Anyway,
Liberty's amazing in it. Everybody's amazing in it. There's some great music. There's a great jam at the end, which is so great. And again, for people, you know, one of the things, Jason, that I find out is that fans don't, and they shouldn't, they just want to go to the shows, buy the records, and be happy for the bands that they love. But they don't realize what really goes on in the music industry, how it works. They think that if they see somebody in a band photo, well, that person's a member of the band and he's making equal money and all that. They don't understand the ins and outs. And I think I talk about it all the time and how this really works. And I think it's great that there's a movie out there that celebrates these people's contributions, but also reveals how this is really set up. And what's fascinating about it for you personally is that you talk about, you know, having done all that other stuff and done session work with Hillary Duff or whoever it may have been. But when you got the call about Five Finger Death Punch, because you had been through all that as a hired gun yourself, your big condition with joining the band you're in now was, I want to be a member, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. I was committed to this idea that I'm going to get what I want. You know, I'm committed to that. So I would go into something and say, oh, this is really close, but it's not what I want. This is really close. We're like 92%, but this is not what I want. What I wanted to do is write songs and have them released to the public. And that's just not available in hired gun work. So it wasn't that difficult for me to step away from it. But what was difficult is trying to figure out how to support yourself when you're taking these major gambles. I got lucky. You know, those guys needed a guitar player. I was friends with them. I said, let me do it, please. I want to be the guy. Okay, fine, you're the guy. I said, but I want to be in a band. You know, I already have a job. I'm playing for Cooper. It's not about money. I can work as a guitarist. That's not a challenge. What I want to do is make records. And take that gamble, you know. So let's see if we can turn on the nation, you know, with music. That's exciting to me. And I got lucky. It worked. But it was scary a little bit of it, you know, because you're walking away from income and then you're like, that's okay as long as I can get by until something else happens. But you have to have a lot of faith, right?
Yeah, I can't remember because it's been a little while since I watched the movie, but is Hugh McDonald in it?
Hugh McDonald is not in it. He was one of the guys I wanted to talk to, but to cover the Bon Jovi story, I mean, there really isn't anyone better than Phil X. And Phil, I've known Phil X since I was 16 years old. He used to come over and we used to jam together in my parents' basement. You know, he's from the same place I'm from. No. And he's great for stealing. I can steal a lot of good licks off Phil X.
Well, the reason I mentioned Hugh is because his story is really fascinating because he was the ultimate hired gun in the sense that not only did a lot of session stuff, but he actually is the guy who played on almost all the Bon Jovi records uncredited while Alec was on stage playing live. And to bring that full circle, finally, just recently, Bon Jovi actually announces him as the guy in the band. And then John himself went to bat to get him inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is really unheard of when you consider almost 90% of the work he's done with that band was as a session guy, uncredited. So that's the story of a hired gun that's come completely like 180 degrees to where he started and where he spent much of his time.
I think John is doing the right thing because I hear all the stories because Phil and I talk all the time. Phil just moved to Las Vegas, so Phil lives like 10 minutes from my house. But anyway, he was saying that John said, you know, I really want to talk to you. And I'm thinking about, you know, this year I'd like to put you on the poster, the shirts and all that stuff. And it was actually Tico that came to John and said, listen, if you're going to put Phil in the picture, you really got to put Hugh in there too. I mean, think of how many years that guy's been flying the flag, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's where John's head's at.
Yeah, and Hugh, he's a great guy. And I know that I know that John personally went to the Hall of Fame because Hugh was not originally going to be inducted with them. And it's really unheard of if you think about it. It's a crazy anomaly because there's hardly any other precedent for a guy who was basically uncredited and unseen then being inducted into the Hall of Fame with the band. I mean, it was a great thing for Hugh because he's such a good guy and was a huge contributor, but it really sets a strange precedent for the Hall because nothing like that's ever been done before. To my knowledge, the ultimate hired gun doesn't get any recognition until they finally get inducted. Even Howard Stern, who inducted him, was on the record saying, I don't know who this guy is.
You know? That's great. I saw it online. It was so well done, and Howard was so good. And what can I say? You know, we're talking about, you know, what I've learned about the music business is, you know, when all your favorite bands get mega big and then they split up, you're like, well, how bad could it be? I don't understand. But now that we're getting our own little taste of this stuff, I get it. Because it's a new batch of feelings and frustrations that you have never experienced before. And it's hard to process it, man, because you're thinking, I'm supposed to be really happy. I got what I wanted. What? I don't understand this. You know, some people can't take it.
And that's why it's so hard for fans to understand from the outside when they just look at their favorite bands. They want them to stay together, keep going. They can't comprehend how it could be that tough. But, yeah, there are challenges indeed. I don't want to keep you too much longer. I know you got a gig tonight in Alabama. Everybody, Five Finger Death Punch, currently on tour. Shows coming up as well. Big tour coming up with Breaking Benjamin. All the dates at fivefingerdeathpunch.com. And the new album is out this coming Friday. But before I let you go, back to the one more thing on the movie. So the movie's been out for a little bit. It's on Netflix. It's on DVD, Blu-ray, and all that. I've only seen it on Netflix. Is there, if I buy the disc, is there bonus content? Because you said you shot so much. When I watch this thing, it's like I want so much more when it's over. So is there more stuff?
Yes, there is more stuff. Actually, well, first of all, if you buy the physical, the DVD or Blu-ray, it does come with a second disc of bonus interview footage.
All right.
So I encourage that. It also has some more jams. I think Phil X plays a couple of his originals on there. We were out of gas. By the time we were doing the bonus features, I'm like, I'm out of gas with this. But let's put it all together. I think those extra things are good, are helpful as far as in, you know, exciting the consumer. It is on Netflix, can be watched anytime, anywhere. And we're already talking about a number two. I'm still licking my wounds from the first one, so it's hard for me to get it. You know, it's like coming back from Vietnam. Want to go back? give me a minute. You know.
Was it successful for you, Jason? Did the film do what you wanted it to do commercially? I mean, I know you probably didn't go into it as a big money-making venture, but did it at least do what you had hoped to? And it sounds like it, if there's talk about doing another one, that it was worth it.
I'm the luckiest guitar player in the world, I swear. That we're about 75% recouped. When did it come out? August or something? I can't even remember. It came out August, fall of last year. So if you figure if I can get all the money back within a year, I am laughing. But let's keep our fingers and toes crossed that nothing goes wrong.
Well, it's a great film. Everybody check it out. Hired Gun, like Jason said, you can watch it on Netflix, and you can also get the disc, which I'm definitely going to seek out because I definitely want to see some of that bonus stuff. And I'm an old school guy anyway. I like having things physically and holding on to them. So grab a Blu-ray on that. I'm all about CDs still, all about Blu-rays. That's when I feel like I truly have something when I have it in that way. Last thing. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, we should do the Ed Trunk story and just think of all the people that will contribute on that film. Oh.
I have a guy that's a producer in, I just had lunch with him in LA last week, and he's a producer on a very, very popular network TV show. And he had the idea not too long ago. He just wanted to have a couple camera people just follow me in my day-to-day life. Like, one minute you're hunting down Vinnie Vincent, the next minute I'm here, the next minute I'm doing this, and like just through the rock and roll journey of 35 years. I was like, it's not a bad idea. If you can find someone who wants to televise it, let's do it. But that's always the challenge.
I've got the perfect fly on the wall videographer fellow. But wouldn't it be interesting? I mean, one day we're going to be so old, Eddie, and you're going to look back and go, I should have fucking taped that stuff.
Gonna be? You know? I'm 53, Jason. I am. Gonna be? I got my eye on retirement, bro.
That's awesome.
I mean, you talk about being through the wars. I got 35 years in radio and TV and record business. I got scars, man. I've been beat up.
I love it. Well, Ed, I love what you do. I think you're fantastic. I love your show.
Thanks, man.
I'm a lifer. So thank you for
bro. I appreciate that, man. And last thing, what's your favorite music doc? Since you said you love them, give us your favorite one.
Wow, put on the spot. Well, I liked Amy was pretty good. I've looked back at the Clive Davis one was pretty good. I mean, I've watched them all, dude.
Me too.
I even like stuff. Let's go way back. There was a Oh Say Can You Scream, Skid Row. It was really good. There was a Bon Jovi All Access, like an extended doc, right? Remember all that stuff from the
80s? You're talking the home video stuff. Yeah, you're talking back in the days of VHS home video. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I got them all. I have all of them. And, I mean, you know, when I saw 20 Seconds, 20 Feet from Stardom, 20 Seconds, I'm brain dead. 20 Feet from Stardom, that was kind of like, you know what? That feels like familiar territory to me. A bunch of these people that are standing on stage with uber celebrities but don't get the gratification because they're hired. I thought that was the one that kind of said, you know what? That's kind of like how I felt. I can make that movie. I could, but I'll do it like the metal rock version, you know?
Yeah, you know, I know I keep saying I'm going to let you go, but I just had Dizzy Reed on my show last week, and I brought this up to him. Here's a guy who's been in Guns N' Roses consistently for 28 years and can still walk to the corner and get a carton of milk and not be stopped or bothered by anyone. He's been in Guns N' Roses 28 years.
Well, you know what's
crazy
there, Ed? He should move out of L.A. because fucking Tom Cruise could roll up at the Starbucks next to you and be like, it's Tom Cruise.
Well, I'm not saying Dizzy is seeking the attention. I'm just saying it's interesting how that works, too. Like, everybody's got the one or two guys that everybody knows, and then you have another guy that's literally been on a stage with Axl Rose for 28 years. And, yeah, if he goes into a rock show, a few people might know. But I talked to him about it. He can still go get a quart of milk, and not one person is going to know he's a guy from Guns N' Roses. It's really wild when you think about that.
I have a lot of respect for him, and I'll tell you why. here's a guy who, even though he's busy as shit with these other huge gigs that he has, he still gets in. He still goes and does the, you know, the Dizzy Night, and where I'm going to play my song. Like I
hookers
wish
and
I
blow.
I wish I had that. I envy him. He's got he's got multiple outlets. I only have one.
Well, listen, man, speaking of the one that you have, you got a gig tonight in Alabama, so I should let you get to it. Say hello to the guys. Pick up the new Five Finger record. It's out this coming Friday, and Justice for None. And like I said, currently on tour with Shinedown and then segueing into a tour with Breaking Benjamin. All the dates are at fivefingerdeathpunch.com. Good to talk to you, man. I'm sure I'll see you soon, okay?
Eddie, thank you very much for having me on.
All right, bro. Anytime. Talk to you.
Okay, bud. Bye.
Bye. My thanks to Jason Hook for calling in. Check out that movie, Hired Gun, if you didn't see it. It's now on Netflix. It is absolutely phenomenal, and appreciate Jason's time. All right, we'll come right back and talk to Billy Duffy of The Cult next on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for that same car you want, and your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
If you like sports podcasts, check out Podcast One Sports Now every Tuesday on Podcast One Sportsnet.
The Yankees and Red Sox are already fighting it out for first in the East, and it looks like they'll be the two teams going down the stretch.
Backed by AP's sports department, Jim Litke and Tim Dahlberg break down the latest news and events throughout the week and podcasting from all major sporting events on site throughout the year.
Keep a close eye on LeBron because we're pretty sure there's some heroics left in this guy.
Check out Podcast One Sports Now at Podcast One Sportsnet and Apple Podcasts. Also, remember to rate and review.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Eddie Trunk here with you on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast. Interview number two is with Billy Duffy of The Cult. I ran into Billy a couple weeks ago when I was in L.A., and as I mentioned, I'm just coming off of hosting Rocklahoma. The Cult were staying in the same hotel as I, the Hard Rock in Tulsa, and I hosted a meet and greet with these guys, and then I said to Billy, hey, come on the air before you play Rocklahoma, and he was nice enough to do so. He swung by my radio booth as I was doing a broadcast, and here is that conversation with Billy Duffy of The Cult.
I'm in like the 70s guy, so I saw like your favorite band, UFO.
When did you see UFO?
77, probably.
Your Lights Out tour.
Yep. People do love to correct me, but my recollection is there was a venue in Manchester where I grew up called the Free Trade Hall.
Yeah.
And I would go to every single gig and try and sneak in. We all did. We were a bunch of little urchins, and we would hang around at the backstage door to watch them get out of their cars just to see the rock stars walk on the pavement where we generally hung out. And I saw loads of stuff. I saw Ted Nugent's UK tour. That had quite an impact with the big semi-acoustic.
Sure.
Who else? Heap. It's Damon Fox.
Damon
The Cult is here. Keyboards is here.
Unfortunately, you don't have a headset for him, but you got to talk real loud if they want to hear you, Damon. But you saw Uriah Heep? Is that what you
Rush,
yelled out?
Uriah Heep, Blue Oyster Cult, where the drummer got off the drum kit and walked to the front and they had six guitars. Hunter Ronson, which I loved. I'm a big Ian Hunter Motley Hoople fan, and I loved all that stuff. But unfortunately, not a lot of people showed up to that one. It was Ian Hunter's Overnight Angels. I've got another band for you.
Did you ever talk to Joe Elliott about Motley Hoople?
Yes,
oh,
often.
God, he's
two things.
Way into it.
Football, soccer, and them. Yes.
With Joe.
Yeah. So, when we did those tours together, we did those. Yeah, we, that's what we talk
he's
about.
He's way into that.
Deep.
What was the band when you were a kid growing up in Manchester? Was there one band that you saw that made you want to play the guitar? You said Ted seeing Nugent.
Nugent, I liked the semi-acoustic.
Which you would end up playing.
Yeah, yeah. Like there was something, he really played on the feedback aspect. Because everybody else used Les Pauls, which is what I loved. But he had this big semi-acoustic, and to me, it really resonated. Like, it was just so different, the way he used it.
I say this all the time. I think because Nugent is obviously so polarizing with some of his views and things he says, people forget that he's a really good musician. He's a great guitar player, I think.
I like simple music done well. Yeah. I've never been a fan of shred. I mean, like, the kind of guys who learnt to shred in my school never got any girls, and they never left the house. So, you know, we were, you know, I think in all things, a balance is important.
Yeah.
So I like Thin Lizzy. Probably one band that really drove me mental was the Thin Lizzy.
The two guitar thing. Yeah. Gorham and Downey.
Yeah. I did see him as a trio before Whiskey in the Jar.
With Eric Bell?
With Ding Dong Bell on guitar. Fantastic guitar player.
Yeah.
Rocker. Things Ain't Working Out Down on the Farm. All that really early stuff. They were on a bill because my dad, as a birthday present, took me to see Slade. So my father had to endure Slade. First band on, Suzy Quatro. So I am like the 70s guy, because that's all we had, really. That, you know, and football. That was it.
But you know what's funny? And I talk about this all the time. You growing up in England, like, I'm fascinated by the bands that literally made no or maybe very little impact in America, but were gods over there. Thin Lizzy in America, one-hit wonder. Boys Are Back in Town,
that's it.
Yeah. T-Rex in America, one song, bang a gong. Here, over there, I just watched a couple documentaries. Oh, yeah, T-Rex to see was like the Beatles. It was crazy.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned Slade. Slade here, maybe one song. Status Quo, nothing here.
No, not even. Totally unheard of. They were legendary. I saw them play once. The original lineup. Lancaster, Coughlin, Parfitt and Rossi. And the way they start the show, if you go back on the YouTube, they would walk out on stage and all face in on the drum riser. And this is like 75, maybe 70. And they would all start that boogie thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like a bit of a sucker for like a three chord, you know, and it was Status Quo. Then I saw AC/DC with Bon Scott. I even hit the guitar when Angus... It's like 77 or 78, maybe 77. They would take Angus off the stage, Bon, and they'd come in the back of the venue and walk down the middle of the stalls to get back on stage with Angus on his shoulders. So everybody tries to hit the guitar. So I managed to get a good score on there.
Yeah.
I've been at loads of gigs. Tom Petty, when Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers opened for... Nils Lofgren on the Cry Tough tour. I saw that at Manchester Apollo, which is still a venue that my band plays.
Yeah.
Angus and Bon did that on the Whiskey Sunset.
Whiskey?
Angus and Bon. Bon Scott played the. They played. Angus. AC/DC played the Whiskey?
Yes. Yeah.
Early on?
They played with punk clubs first.
On the shoulders. With a long cable up.
Oh, man.
No, AC/DC.
Damon, we don't have a mic for Damon. Sorry, Damon. I wish we could hear you better, but.
They play punk clubs. When AC/DC started in England, punk was happening. So nobody really knew, other than the fact that the guitar player had a schoolboy outfit on, was very eclectic. People really didn't judge them very early. They play punk clubs. I remember them. I missed them in Manchester when they played a place. I think it was the Electric Circus. I was too young to go, and it was a very nasty part of town. But when they started, people, because nobody had defined what punk was. It wasn't the Sid Vicious Doll cliche then.
Uh-huh.
Punk was like this fluid thing that nobody could define. And it was just that period is when I left high school. So that's a big part of kind of the cult's DNA. There's punk rock because I lived it. You know what I mean?
Well, I was going to ask you, though, growing up, you know, seeing UFO and AC/DC and Thin Lizzy and all these bands, did you embrace punk when it came into
Absolutely,
England?
Yeah.
You were into it?
Yeah, because the thing that growing up in England was like the bands like Zeppelin and a lot of the bands who became enormous in America spent a long time in America. So we could never see them. They were these, they would appear from their private jet and poof, they'd be at Nebworth playing 250. I couldn't afford that. I couldn't afford to get the bus into Manchester, let alone... So for us, any band that we could sneak in to see, But to me, I would go and see, and Damon mentioned Uriah Heep. I did go and see Uriah Heep.
Another band that never, yeah. You know, maybe Easy Living a little bit.
And, yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Still, but they're different. I mean, people absolutely loved Heap. I mean, it was a whole different thing
well,
there, right?
Yeah, they're still very, Wishbone Ash, there's another one. But what I do, because I was such an obsessive on music, I would happily then go and see Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers or Wayne County. Or whatever punk band, the million English punk bands, the Cortinas, the Boys, the Banshees, the Damned. I would go and see whatever was on, Slaughter and the Dogs. So that's just my upbringing. So it's kind of in the back. You know, people in America probably see the Cult from one perspective and maybe scratch their heads sometimes about some of the things we do musically. But it's just nice to try and explain to people that deep down, you know,
it's all part of the DNA.
It's part of it. But you know, as much as I loved Thin Lizzy and AC/DC, I would embrace the New York Dolls and Iggy. To me, I didn't differentiate between the two. Just good was good, and the louder the guitars were better.
Did you see the Dolls?
No.
You saw Johnny Thunders,
I saw
though.
Johnny Thunders. I didn't see the Dolls.
What kind of shape was Johnny in when you saw him at that time?
He was capable enough to hold a phone and give me a guitar pick. That's the story. He actually gave me a guitar pick out of his pocket.
Oh,
true
wow.
story. True story. And I still use the same brand of picks to this day, and now I've got my own ones with my little logo on them.
Yeah, I just watched a documentary on him recently. It was on Netflix or something. It was called, like, this In Search of Johnny, and it's such a tragic story. I mean, it tells you the whole arc and all the issues he had and all that, but it's a pretty incredible story.
Well, at
really
the time, well, you're a kid. You don't really know all that stuff. You know, I didn't. I wasn't conscious of all the drug abuse and all that stuff. But
did you get tied up into it much?
Well, I mean, I have taken some Class A drugs when I was a ute, because in the UK there was no Great South American Connection, so the drugs were basically opiates or speed. That was when I was a kid. There was alcohol, which was a mainstay and still is of British life.
Right.
And then you would augment that with either opiates or speed. I have done a line of speed off Lemmy's Blade. So you either have or you haven't. But I was never a big drug guy. To be totally honest, I'm not trying to sound like a big shot, but drugs, they didn't work for me personally.
Yeah.
And I was just a real boozer. Yeah. I used to really drink a lot of spirits, hard liquor. And
when did you stop drinking?
Oh, 20-odd years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it just wasn't fun
was
anymore.
Was it a process, or was it just one day you woke up and you said, that's it?
It was a bit of a process. It was becoming just wasn't fun anymore.
Yeah.
They have certain sayings in certain type support groups, but, you know, it's fun, then it's fun with problems, and then it pretty much just becomes problems.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, I just tried to stop for a little bit, and I liked it. And luckily, I happened to be in a place at the time I was living in Los Angeles where, you know, the sun's shining. It's different when it's raining every day and you're miserable. You know, you end up with Seattle and grunge, or you end up with punk rock in England.
Right, right.
It's circumstantial as to, you know, I'm not going to go for a nice walk in the sunshine when it's pouring with rain for 3 weeks.
Right, right, right.
So you stay home and you either maybe write great music, you know, and perhaps experiment with mind-altering substances.
Well, you look great, man. We were just talking before you came on. You were here in Oklahoma, and you're in search of finding some sort of food that will not kill you. You know, that's not fried, that's not beef, that's not bacon, and not ranch dressing.
But that's not. I'm not being like some kind of snob.
Get older, we're trying to keep it together.
I never liked red meat when I was a kid. I'm an English guy. I never really liked the Sunday roast. I don't like pink meat in the middle, and, you know, so it's not like I've suddenly become this, like, new age.
No, I didn't think that at all.
I don't like red meat.
But
never
you
will.
But my point is that you said, you know, when you were 20 years ago, you got smart and you said, you know, I can't drink anymore, and you did the right thing for your body,
for me,
and your future. And I mean, you know, you're still here, looking great, sounding great. So that's the most important thing, that light goes on. I got lucky. I've been in the music industry my whole life, 35 years. If somebody said to me tomorrow, you can never touch another drink again, wouldn't bother me at all. No, not faze me at all. And I never did a drug, ever did drugs. So I'm not sitting here saying it just wasn't for me, but same with Damon.
Like Damon, Damon Fox, he's nodding his head in agreement now. I'm describing Damon.
I'm the Zappa of the band.
No drugs.
Yeah.
No drink. No coffee, though. That I can't relate to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, me and Damon, we can't bond over coffee because he doesn't drink it. I'm like, what? You don't drink coffee? What?
That's the biggest drug of all. For some people, can't function without
it. Yeah,
it's a big thing. Tell me what's going on with the band before I let you get out of here.
Okay.
And get something to eat. What's the latest on the front with the Cult? Besides the fact you're hopefully going to play tonight at Rocklahoma.
We're here for our second year to try to play to the good people of Oklahoma. Yeah, we show up. We're definitely tryers.
They were here last year and got rained out. That's what we're talking about.
So we're hoping the weather cooperates this year. This year for the Cult really is just, we did an album in 2016 called Hidden City. We toured that for about a year and a half. That's pretty much come to its end. So we're basically just doing one-off shows and for this year. And then we have the R3 tour which you know about, with Stone Temple Pilots and Bush.
Right.
That's the biggest
commitment. Two-thirds are on this bill today because STP's playing it. The only one we don't have is Bush. They were here last year, I think, but I just saw Gavin, actually.
Yeah. So that's the big tour in the summer in America for us, which will be fun. I enjoy that. That'll be the...
You have history with the other two bands much?
Yeah,
with
we're pretty friendly.
Bush?
Yeah, we're fairly friendly. So we're all looking forward to it. There's a lot of... I've played with DeLeo Brothers a lot, and I kind of know Gavin from around and mutual friends.
Right.
I know his drummer, and I think it'll be great.
And you guys are going to rotate the billing,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's the cunning thing they've managed to get somehow... hoodwink three bands into
Well, here's my thing on that. You tell me if you agree. I feel that if I was in that situation, the spot I'd want is the middle. I was talking to a couple of people like, hell yeah, get out of there before traffic and all that. But you want to be in the middle. You still get a little darkness. It's still the sweet spot. People didn't just sit through two bands. So maybe the closing spot isn't the best.
We, as a band, the Cult, we often find ourselves in that position generally. I mean, we're going to play in Spain. We're going on directly before Simple Minds, who are back with a big album and fairly big in America and huge in Europe. I mean, they're like a stadium act. We happen to be randomly playing with them. It's a nice slot. It's just funny. Yeah, we're all going to have to eat it and go on first, eat some big humble pie, go on when it's light. People are still eating nachos. You know what? We've publicized it so much. I think
people know to get in there.
People
to
know
see
to
all
go
three
early.
Bands.
That's the whole point of the publicity on it. And it's been done before, but I don't necessarily know. It's completely that everybody does the same slot an equal amount of times. I think there was some shenanigans about what city different bands headlined, though. They were trying to say it was a lottery, but I'm not buying
it. So has it been predetermined, or are you actually going to flip coins?
No, it's predetermined.
So it's all predetermined what the order is for
and
each city already?
That will be announced in the cities where each one... I know a couple where we're headlining. I'll get one, for example, is Toronto, where the Cult were absolutely massive. And I know we're closing there, and that can't be a coincidence, because we have... tremendous history up there,
and that makes sense. If every band has certain pockets and states and areas where that do a little better, and it would make sense to do that. But
I think
it's great that you announce it in advance too, because let's be honest. I mean, if there is somebody that's maybe a fan of two bands and not so much the other, and they know the first band's going on, they don't have to break their ass to get there after work early, and they can see what they want to see.
I think it's good value, man.
Yeah, it's great.
You
great
know,
bill.
Three headline bands, a lot of hit records, many millions of records sold, a lot of hits be played, you know. And I think in this day and age where there's somewhere between a gig and like a festival, which can be a little overwhelming for some people, there's almost too much.
Yeah.
This kind of tour, it's a good, nice slice of music. I think the bands are complementary but different enough that, you know, I think it's interesting, and hopefully, you know, it looks like it's selling pretty well. So, you know, we're happy.
And one last thing, you guys have done a lot of stuff with Guns N' Roses as far as opening for them, including on this recent mm-hmm. reunion. How's that whole stuff? Have you had much time to interact with anybody in the band, or you basically do your thing and get
no,
out of
no,
there?
We're friends with them. They did have a lot of time supporting us, and originally I always tell people that. Not many people remember that.
In the US?
In 87, they opened for us.
Oh.
We invited them on the road. So they return the favor.
Oh.
Yeah.
So is that what the bond is really about? I mean, I imagine they're fans of the Cult as well.
Well,
but
Ian, I can take no credit for it. In 87, we were looking for a band to go on tour with us to do Electric. We'd been with Billy Idol, opening for him, and he was doing arenas on Whiplash Smile, and that was great fun. And Ian said, there's this band, I had never heard of them, Guns N' Roses. They're from LA, they're great, they're really great, rock, authentic, it's the real deal. I tried to go and see them in London at the Marquee, where I was we were still living at the time. Couldn't get in, typical British fashion. They're like, I don't care what band you're in, it's sold out, piss off. That's Britain.
But I'm in the cult.
Piss off. And so that's exactly what happened. So anyway, cut a long story short, that was, I believe, their first major tour. They were supposed to go out opening for
Queensrÿche and Helix,
Ace Frehley and Y&T.
Oh, Y&T.
The Guns N' Roses were.
That's the tour that they were going to do. That's what I heard.
Yes, because
you're right.
Y&T.
Ace Frehley and Y&T, because I signed Ace Frehley at that time.
Right.
I was his A&R guy.
Where?
87.
To Megaforce Records, 87. I signed Ace Frehley, and Ace's tour, that tour ended up being Ace, Y&T, and Faster Pussycat.
Right, so it was that tour.
That slot. So they basically, at that time, because Faster Pussycat's first album came out the same exact day as Appetite for Destruction.
When they played with us, nothing's changed with Guns N' Roses. They remain friends of ours. You know, some of them are close friends of ours. You know, obviously Matt Sorum's been in both bands. They kind of...
Oh, yeah.
They didn't really steal him off us, but, I mean, we'd done a tour with Matt, and we were kind of going into a downtime, and they desperately needed a drummer, and I think Duff and Slash came to see us play in LA at the Universal Amphitheater somewhere, and they liked Matt so much they made him an offer that he couldn't refuse. And I encouraged him, if you ask him if you ever see him, I was like, I'd take it, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity, because their trajectory at that point, I mean, they'd done Appetite was done, and this was User Illusions, they were in the studio.
Yeah, right.
And I just said to Matt, man, you should take it, you know?
Yeah, I saw you guys open for him just recently at the Dodger. I was at the Dodger Stadium show, actually. And it's great when you play with them, because you have a long set. You guys you do like almost a full headline set.
It was good. We did Mexico City, it was off the hook. San Diego's always strong for the Cult. That was really good. The only problem with the LA show was that nobody mentioned that because of Dodger Stadium's curfew,
it was early.
We were going on at like, you know,
7
it was like a late lunch. No, 6:00. So everybody who came were in the parking lot when we were. So that was a bit of a problem. Guns N' Roses went on at the normal time we would go on.
Like 8 o'clock.
Yeah, they went on
at
8.
I know.
Yeah, right. But
it was crazy, because I remember that was buzzing around. And the irony of that is all anybody talks about is Guns N' Roses going on so late. And at that thing, they were on in daylight. It was like 7:45.
Yeah.
It's
Dodger Stadium, which is ironic, really, but they have a curfew. So, but it was, you know, it was fun. It was an event, and it was fun. It seemed in some way poetic that they invited us to play with them.
Right.
And they invited us to do a few more that we just couldn't do because we had tours of our own in like Australia and Canada. We would have done more. The fans like that combination, obviously. It's a very compatible, you know, so, but it was great. It was nice to be a part of it, and we're all still friends, so that's good.
And the Cult now, you got, of course, Damon over here. You got my buddy Tempesta, who's been in the band, what,
longest
12
serving
years?
Drummer?
12 years?
Yes.
You didn't tell me last night?
It's incredible.
My gosh. So John Tempesta logging 12 years with the Cult, and who's on bass with you now?
Grant Fitzpatrick, who's an Australian.
And how long has he been in?
A couple of years now.
He replaced Chris, right?
Yeah. Chris Wise, he left, and then we got Grant in. And that's the lineup at the moment. It's great to have Damon, have some keyboards, and just give us an opportunity to kind of expand from certain, you know, guitar-orientated stuff, you know. It's good.
And then thought about another record yet, or too soon?
It's, that's more like, it's more like when it feels right, like for me and Ian to get together and really want to do it. I just think it's all about quality, not quantity.
Agreed, yeah.
With older bands. Yeah. And it's like, I'd rather put out good stuff infrequently than just churn out. I can't do it. I couldn't, if I don't think it's the best we can. I want to finish and think that's the best we can do, not that's the best we can do given the time we've got and the money. And so, you know, we like to write new songs, you know, we I'd never rule it out.
Right.
You know, but there's no like concrete plans to have an album or do anything, you know, right now. But there's been talk of getting some new music together.
Well, my thanks to Billy Duffy of The Cult. You know, The Cult got rained out at Rocklahoma last year, so they got scheduled again this year, and they played without a hitch this year. So it was good to see them finally get a set in and sounding great. Appreciate Billy coming by. And thanks to Jason Hook again, who joined me earlier on the podcast. And again, remember to always shop on Amazon.com by starting at my page, which is Amazon.com/shop/EddieTrunk. Appreciate you starting there. Follow on my social media at Eddie Trunk on Twitter, where I am most active. There's also Instagram and Facebook, EddieTrunk.com. As usual, the official online home. Music, news, and a whole lot more. Brand new Trunk Nation t-shirt available in the merch store on my site. Signed copies of either of my books, the blog, which is The Trunk Report, and a whole lot more, all on EddieTrunk.com. Don't forget, next up, I'll be in Cincinnati on June 9th. Coming up really soon, doing a speaking show at the venue. Come out and join me there. All of the appearances, like I said, are on the homepage of my site. Katie Irizarry is our producer. I'll see you guys next Thursday for another all-new episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, free as always, podcast1.com and iTunes.
Podcast is giving away something big.
Woo! It's happening.
It's happening. Don't worry, I'm sure you're overwhelmed.
Like, really big.
For over $100,000.
Oh, it's over $100,000. Damn. We're like baby Oprahs over here.
Find out just what they're giving away by downloading the Lady Gang Podcast at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Also, remember to rate and review.